Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, March 1st edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next 45 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. One guest coming your way here today, that is the great Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com. We're going to chat some college football and some college basketball here. As the month of madness begins, March is finally here. Conference tournament's in full swing. The NCAA tournament coming up here in about 2 weeks, actually starting less than 2 weeks from today, about 12 days from today, with those play-in games on Tuesday and Wednesday. So obviously lots of stuff to talk about with that. Over at bangthebook.com, lots of stuff going on as well. You can check out my MLB season win total articles. All 15 teams in the American League have been posted. As I mentioned on yesterday's show, three of my stronger opinions coming from the AL West, which I posted a couple of days ago. So if you haven't had the chance to check those out, make sure that you do. There is a primer page that has links to all 15 that are done. So my recommendation to you is to just bookmark that. I send out the notifications if you've subscribed to notifications at bangthebook.com when I update that article. So that'll let you know when I've posted a new round of those MLB totals. Conference tournament previews up over there at the website as well. Situational betting articles, just tons of stuff. Day after day, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Check out our free pick contest. You can win some cash prizes in those. Our sportsbook reviews as well. You know about that DSI sportsbook promo code BTB and the number 25. $25 free bet just for signing up. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino. Critical, as always, to shop around for the best prices, whether it's futures stuff, conference tournament, single game lines, March Madness lines, whatever the case may be. One guest coming your way here today on this Thursday edition of the show, that is the great Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com. Bradley, how's it going today, brother?
It's going well. Good to hear your voice on this fine Thursday morning.
Yeah, well, actually, we're recording on Wednesday afternoon here, so some of these lines may, of course, have moved a little bit. I don't think they'll move too significantly between now and then, but you're doing another one of these studio-quality recordings. Wanted to make sure that we get this up. So, by the way, for our listeners that are used to hearing Rolf Michaels, follow Brad Powers. We're going to chat with him on Friday this week. We'll go ahead and start the show off with him on Friday, and then I'll fill in the gaps with whatever time we need throughout the rest of the broadcast. But Brad, I've been talking a ton of college basketball, and it's very exciting to talk about here at this time of the year. We did 10 conference tournaments on yesterday's show, but I wouldn't mind a little bit of a break from the hardwood, so let's talk some college football here. I know that you're starting to compile your team win totals, and you're eagerly awaiting that market to open.
Yeah, believe it or not, I actually have 118 of the 130 season win totals already done, at least my first batch, because I had my first set of power ratings done, plugged in the strength of schedules and the schedules. And the only reason I don't have 130 done at this point is still waiting on the Mountain West to announce their schedules. We pretty much know who they're going to play, but I like taking a peek and seeing when exactly those teams are going to be playing, because obviously teams playing back-to-back road trips type of things can affect the lines for the most part. But yeah, already, I know it's kind of weird because I do power rate as well, 351 Division I college basketball teams. But let's face it, I'm not married. I don't have kids. And this is a labor of love for me, so particularly the college football side of things. So, yeah, why the heck not? And why not have your first set of college season win totals already done?
Now, I know we talked, I think it was 2 weeks ago about, or maybe it was last, actually it could have been last week. I don't know. Every one of these weeks seems to run together here with just how busy all of us are at this time of the year. I know you talked about a future position on Arizona that you were looking at. You know, think that they've got a pretty good shot here in the Pac-12 South. I obviously don't want you to give away any of your win totals. I know that you want to keep that stuff close to the vest and be able to, you know, have the opportunity to take advantage of those openers that come out in, what, probably about 3 months' time now. But as you were going through the process, as you were looking at some of these season win totals, are there a couple of teams that you could throw out there for us that, you know, maybe you're going to be a little bit better than you had initially thought?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. It's actually, you know, looking at teams that are going to be actually worse than what I thought. But, you know, let me throw you one out there. And I did put out my top 10 as far as the Power 5 conferences, the ones with the highest season win totals. You know, my favorite futures bet right now is Washington, a team that's just not getting priced like a top 10 team. You can still find hopefully 30-1 out there in the marketplace, but here's a Washington team that, you know, besides the opener against Auburn, which is a totally winnable game for them, they're going to be favored in each of their last 11 games. They don't play USC from the other side of the division as far as the Pac-12 South goes. might play USC in the championship game, but I think they're the overwhelming favorite in the Pac-12. And you look at the teams around them, like an Alabama 2-1, Clemson 5 or 6-1, Georgia same boat 5 or 6-1, Ohio State 7-1, and other teams up there in the top 10. And you're meaning to tell me a Washington team 30-1 price? Now I got season win total on them at 10. And even though the fact that I got them favored in 11 or 12 games, so that was a team that I think still flying a little bit under the radar. Now, a couple teams that I think might be in store for a not so great season. Let's go to the SEC. Season win total for LSU right now, I got them about 7.5 for the Tigers. And let's face it, if that indeed is the case for them, Ed Orgeron in just his second season, not going to be a good look. Let's break it down. Miami, Florida in the opener, they'll probably be a short underdog in that one, LSU. At Auburn, sizable dog there. At Florida, probably a pick'em game. And they play Georgia at home. They'll be a home underdog there. Alabama at home, home underdog that one. And they finish up the season at Texas A&M in probably a pick'em game. That was a little bit of a surprise for me, the fact that LSU coming so low at 7.5. And maybe another team that's getting some top 10 love out there, the Michigan Wolverines, in a lot of power rankings and even mine, they're a top 12 team. Problem is the Michigan Wolverines play top 5 strength of schedule this year. And when you look at games at Notre Dame, you look at Michigan State, at Ohio State, home games against Wisconsin and Penn State, they'll be an underdog in at least 3 of those 5 games, and a couple of games maybe only around a field goal favorite. So I only have Michigan season win total at 8.5, despite the fact they're getting a lot of top 10 love.
Well, those are two really interesting ones. And when you think about LSU, I mean, if they had a do-over, I think they would certainly take it with Ed Orgeron, because Ed Orgeron did not get along with Matt Canada, and that's a huge loss for the LSU program, not just because of how creative he is offensively, but also from a recruiting standpoint. And that's something that we talk about, all the time here on this show, and I don't think other shows and other media outlets focus on it enough. It's those coordinators that oftentimes seal the deal. If you're a head coach, maybe you go and pick up that ESPN top 100 recruit or something like that, you kind of make that final push. But the guys in the trenches in terms of recruiting are the position coaches and the coordinators. And if you've got a 4 or 5-star kid that you're trying to land, it falls on that side of the ball's coordinator. And if you don't have those elite level coordinators in college football anymore as a top program, you're going to fall by the wayside. And, for Michigan, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, offensively, they just really haven't been able to put it all together. Maybe they'll get a little bit fortunate with the transfer of Shea Patterson coming in from Ole Miss. But again, that's another one where defensively they've been fantastic at recruiting. They've done a very, very good job putting together strong defensive teams. They don't have a closer among their offensive coaching staff, and it has really hurt them. I think that you see that, with the schedule next year, where from a talent standpoint, the Wolverines should be able to compete with those 5 teams. But in reality, they're probably going to struggle.
Yeah, and if Shea Patterson isn't the answer, then it's not going to be a good look. And let's also, I'm glad you brought up recruiting, and we mentioned Michigan and LSU not trending in the right direction. Well, they certainly didn't, trend in the right direction as far as recruiting this year. Michigan really didn't even sign a top 20 class, really failing on the elite prospects out of one recruiting service, at least ESPN, even though I'm not a huge fan of ESPN's recruiting rankings. Just to show you, I mean, Michigan didn't sign a single top 100 player. And then you look at LSU, a typical top 5 team when it comes to recruiting, I think barely signed like maybe the number 15 class in the country. When you're competing against Alabama and now Georgia, a riser, and Auburn traditionally, again, when you're already behind the 8-ball, you lost an offensive coordinator, Ed Orgeron's not going to ever wow you as far as X and O's. I mean, it's going to be about the Jimmy and the Joes for LSU if they're going to expect to win it. And when you're signing the number 15 class in the country, that's just not going to cut it.
No, it's definitely not. And then also when you talk about the SEC, and in particular the SEC West, with Texas A&M now part of the SEC for the last few years here, if you're a kid in Texas and you want to play in the SEC, you're going to try to go to Texas A&M. And if you don't go to Texas A&M, if you're good enough, you're probably going to Alabama. Or, at this point, as you mentioned, Georgia. So, for LSU, it's a very precarious situation for them. And truth be told, and again, I know that we're going way down the college football rabbit hole here, a 7-5 type of year for LSU may be what they need, because then they're justified, with cause there to fire Ed Orgeron and pick up whether it's a hotshot coordinator or some group of five coach that's absolutely killing it, that may be the opening that they need to get back up to a level to compete with the Alabamas and the Georgias and the Auburns of the SEC. So, you know, again, I mean, obviously if you're an LSU fan, that's tough to hear that, you know, a mediocre to subpar season would be the best thing for you. But in this case, it very well could be.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, because last year, I mean, there could have been a possibility they would have gotten rid of Ed Orgeron last year. Keep in mind, they lost to Troy, but what happened after that, they pretty much went on a good to finish the regular season, 6-1 straight up, 7-0 against the spread. So that at least good finish for them kind of masked some of their overall problems for the Tigers. But, I mean, let's face it, an LSU, you should never be losing to Troy at home as a 3-touchdown favorite. And that one kind of, you know, there was talk about Ed Orgeron being on the hot seat, kind of went away a little bit. The bowl loss against Notre Dame didn't help, but I think LSU fans are a pretty smart fan base. I think they're going to agree with you. I think they would hate to go like 9-3 again, because that's what they've been as a program really since the 2011 season. They've been a 9-3 type program. If they just continue to do that, there's not going to be any forward momentum, especially with an up-and-comer in Texas A&M with Jimbo Fisher. I think the bottom falling out, I mean, sometimes you got to burn the barn sometimes in order to save it. But that might actually be the case here. We're 7-5, just might get them back and getting a better head coach at the top.
Last thing I want to talk about here with college football is this has been a little bit of a welcome deviation just to talk something a little bit different than college basketball. Like I said, I love it here this time of the year, but it's never a bad thing to think about the upcoming college football season. I believe you said that you've got Washington favored in 11 of their 12 games, but you've got their season win total at 10. So our listeners may kind of be wondering, you know, if they're favored in 11 games, why wouldn't you have them winning 11 games? So sort of walk us through the process that you come to in terms of getting that final win total number.
All right, and what you do is, you know, I have a projected line on every single game, believe it or not, already on every game for college football, with the exception of the Mountain West Conference, and I'll have that here in a couple of days when they announce their schedules. So, for example, and we'll break this down, like, say Washington at Utah right now is about, I have that as about Washington as a 7-point road favorite. The chances of them winning that game, even though they're favored, probably around 70%. So when you're figuring a win total, they get credit for 0.7. They don't get an automatic win there. They get 0.7 of a win because that's pretty much what their win percentage for that particular game is. You know, on the flip side, the only game where they're an underdog in the Auburn game, I currently have Washington around a 2-point dog in that one at a neutral site. The chances of Washington winning that game, I think, are about 45%. So while I have them probably losing that game just as far as the line is concerned, they still get credit about 0.45 as far as their chances of winning. So when you add in the percentages and even some of their bigger favorite roles, like a Colorado, I got them favored by 4 touchdowns. That's like 96%. When you figure that all out, I mean, that's the correct way of doing season win totals. And the problem with a lot of people and why they lose betting season win totals in any sport is they just go, hey, they're favored in that one, they'll win that one. They're favored in that one, they'll win that one. And a lot of times that makes the public wanting to bet more overs than unders. And one of the major disconnects there is just because they're favored, you should not be automatically giving them, full credit for a win there, because the chances, I mean, if you're favored 12 times, it's not like you're going to, the chances of you winning all 12 of those games straight up is not 100%, obviously. There's going to be a time or two where you can get, the possibility at least remains that you get outright upset. So the correct way of doing a season win total is going off of winning percentages and not just going how many games are going to be favored in.
Exactly. And that's what I do with my season win total previews for college football that I'll do over the summer here once again at bangthebook.com. And that's the way that you have to do it. And I talk about organization, and I got a good listener question about this I want to talk about with our guests, you know, once things calm down a little bit from conference tournaments. But when you talk about organization and making sure that you're properly prepared for these types of things, I have that money line to spread chart printed out. I mean, I did that a few years ago and I still have a copy of that. I mean, it's not going to change. The implied probability based on the spread does not change. 7-point favorite is going to be, 70% likelihood of winning every single year. It's just the way that it goes. So, and if you're a 3% favorite, you're about a 57% likelihood of winning that game. So I've got that chart printed out and it's very easy for me to refer to that when I'm putting together my college football season win totals. And, you know, that's a skill that you need to have, because when you think about it, even a team that's about a 19-point underdog still has about a 2% chance of winning that game based on what the spread dictates. I think 21 and higher is where you get to, you know, single percentage points of probability. So, you know, you have to do things like this if you're preparing for an upcoming season. And, you know, once we roll around to college football, I'm sure we could talk some more about this, but I'm glad that we were able to hit on it here a little bit this week. And again, break up a little bit of that college basketball talk, especially for some of our football starved listeners out there. So, you know, with that being said, Brad, I mean, this is, you know, prime time for college basketball. The next four or five weeks or so with conference tournaments, the early parts of March Madness, and then, you know, obviously the Elite Eight, Final Four, the national championship game. I mean, this is it, man. This is one of the most exciting times of the year.
Oh, no question about it. And I think if you ask pros, actually the most exciting starts about right now, because I think most pros are more prone to betting conference tournament games because there just seems to be more value than the NCAA tournament. Obviously, the NIT, CBI, CIT tournament create some more value than the NCAA tournament. But the next 2 weeks are pretty much, if you're not betting the NIT, CBI, CIT, next 2 weeks are going to offer up at least the most advantageous lines as far as the market aspect goes. And I love it. I mean, I love college basketball. Is such a unique sport where it goes from a very niche betting market, November, December, most of January, and then all of a sudden, mid-February on, it becomes the most bet sport in the world. And it's very exciting. Obviously, people like Cinderella stories, but the reality is, if you look at the national champs the last 15, 20 years, I mean, you get the same names out there, but the tournament's beautiful. And when you count in all the bracket pools, you know, it's the Super Bowl is the single biggest, I wouldn't say event, but single biggest betting game out there. But the single biggest betting event is the NCAA tournament. Hundreds upon hundreds of million dollars just here in the state of Nevada alone are betting on the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, conference tournaments do generally tend to have a lot more value. I mean, everybody's playing March Madness. Everybody's filling out a bracket. I've talked about this before on the show. You know, doesn't matter if you've got a 6 or 7 year old kid, they're filling out a bracket. Women, you know, other male coworkers that have no idea about college basketball, they're filling out brackets. Women that know about college basketball, obviously filling them out as well. Everybody gets involved. People get into pools and, you know, they pick teams. And, you know, I mean, there's so much talk about everything regarding the NCAA tournament. Not nearly as much talk about conference tournaments. I mean, people will talk about those teams that are on the bubble, and we'll have some thoughts on that in a couple of minutes. But, you know, the nuts and bolts of conference tournament betting, you know, we talked about derivative betting on Wednesday with regards to the conference tournament. And here we'll look at some of the other interesting examples that, you know, or the other interesting tips that Brad has for us. And, you know, Brad, I think that your first point here in the notes that you sent over for the show, something we have not yet talked about this week at all on our three programs where we mostly focused on conference tournaments. I think this is a really interesting talking point to start us off.
Oh, there's no question. You know, just basic principles. Look and see where these games are being played. Now, you know, a lot of the smaller conferences, you know, first round or two are being played at home sites. And, you know, just don't always assume that everything's at a neutral. But when it is at a neutral, I mean, it pays to actually look, hey, how far are these teams away from that particular site? You can always find some hidden home court advantages, whether it be a traveling fan base. Let's face it, there's so many of these conference tournament games where, you know, one fan base has 100 fans in the crowd, and the other fan base has thousands. I mean, to me, that's worth a half point or a point when it comes to your pure power rating. And also familiarity with the arena with a neutral site game. You know, the Big Ten, a lot of making waves. They're going to play the first ever as far as their conference tournament, first time they've ever played it in the Madison Square Garden. Well, Ohio State already played there this year, and then that should at least help the Buckeyes as far as not being in awe. And MSG usually has a little bit of a unique backdrop there. And that, to me, is worth at least a half point for the Buckeyes maybe in their first game, the fact that they're actually familiar with that. So it's just basic handicapping 101 and deep dive in what these games are being played. Don't be afraid to shade a little bit of hidden home court advantage for some of those teams.
Yeah, and a lot of what we've talked about with regards to these neutral sites is, you know, some of the ones that have really bad shooting backdrops, some of the ones that are known for being under types of venues, some that are a little bit more neutral in nature. But the familiarity angle is something that is very important, especially, as you mentioned, with Ohio State having played there. And you know, you've got some teams like a Michigan State that's used to playing in these really premier venues like this because, you know, they play those early non-conference tournaments in some very, you know, well-known locations. And, you know, you have some other teams, you know, like maybe in Nebraska, for example, that we've talked about quite a bit here on the show. There's a lot riding on this conference tournament for them. It is a very significant opportunity. They are the only one of the top five teams in the Big Ten not guaranteed a spot in the NCAA tournament, but they have to go play at Madison Square Garden, a place that Nebraska, you know, from a basketball standpoint, obviously would almost never play there unless they get into a situation like this or maybe make the finals of the NIT, something like that. You know, that's a challenging thing. I mean, it is kind of an overwhelming venue, very, very tough shooting backdrop, as we've mentioned. So the deck is stacked against Nebraska in a lot of different ways here with the extra pressure to win and then also now playing in this unfamiliar venue. But then also you talk about proximity to some of these universities, and I think that's a really important point that we haven't talked about yet here on the show. Now, obviously, Rutgers is the closest to Madison Square Garden, but the Scarlet Knights aren't going to have a big fan base for this tournament, I don't think. We know Ohio State fans travel exceptionally well to bowl games, conference championship games, all that type of stuff. The Buckeyes should have pretty good representation at Madison Square Garden. But think about a conference tournament like Conference USA, for example. This year, it's going to be played in Texas. The last several years, it's been played in Birmingham, Alabama. UAB is in Birmingham. Now, you have a little bit of an advantage maybe to some of the Texas schools, or, you know, maybe a little bit of an advantage to, you know, teams that have recently played in Texas as opposed to playing early on in the schedule. You know, proximity to campus is a big deal, especially if you've got a league that's as spread out as, you know, as Conference USA is. So now that it's in Texas, I mean, obviously, you know, UTEP and UTSA aren't great, but still, you know, it's a different type of dynamic, and it's certainly something that takes away from the built-in advantage that somebody like UAB would have.
No question about it. And, you know, another, and let's just face it, conference tournaments are unlike any other part. Even the NCAA tournament, they're unique. Unique in the fact that there's neutral court settings for the most part. Also unique and kind of another thing to maybe factor in is the fact that it's the only time of the year where you're basically, other than the preseason tournaments, playing, you know, the possibility of three or four games in 3 or 4 days. You don't even see it in the NCAA tournament. The most you'll play is, you know, two games in a matter of 3 days. So that's another thing that's very unique about it. But I can't emphasize enough that, you know, the hidden home court advantage a lot of times can really benefit you. The marketplace doesn't always factor in that. I'll use an example. You know, we've seen the market really drive towards Rutgers as we're taping this. I mean, Minnesota opened up about a 2.5-point favorite. I'm not sure that factored in Rutgers having the crowd advantage in that particular game. It gets bet down to pick. Rutgers is even favored by 1. So that's just mispricing there by the opening marketplace. And going back to the Big Ten or even Conference USA, let's face it, how excited is a fan base of a Minnesota or an Iowa or an Illinois? How excited are they when they're having a down season? And are they going to be willing to travel to Chicago? Maybe, yeah, or maybe there's more of an alumni base there. Are they going to travel halfway across the country to New York? I'm not so sure that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that was one where I feel like there was a mispricing for the Ohio Valley Conference Tournament in that Belmont was the favorite when the prices opened over Murray State. Sure, if this conference tournament is still in Nashville, Belmont makes a lot of sense. It's not in Nashville anymore. It's in Evansville, Indiana. So Belmont has to travel for this conference tournament for the first time. I think it was since 2002. So, I mean, that's a net negative for them because, you know, yeah, they're a very good team and they're a 2 seed and they've got the double bye and so on and so forth. But still, they're not sleeping in their own beds. You know, their fan base is not going to turn out for this at all whatsoever. And really, I don't think a whole lot of people are going to go to Evansville for this tournament. I've talked about this on the show already. You know, Nashville, tourist destination, Evansville, not so much. But also for Belmont, you know, they have to actually travel now. And that's a different type of atmosphere as well, a different type of animal for some of these teams. So again, you want to make sure you're looking at those. And to your point about teams using deep rotations, this is something we talked about on Wednesday with regards to derivative betting. And, you know, some of those teams that have used their starters 35 plus minutes in back-to-back games, they got to play a third game in 3 days. That team probably gets gassed in the second half. And you also want to make sure that you're looking at these box scores on a game-by-game basis, because you could have some teams that throughout the course of the season were a little bit deeper, but now the coaches are going to go to the guys that they trust, the upperclassmen that won't be overwhelmed by the moment. They're going to shorten the benches. So maybe you had eight or nine guys that played, you know, 18 to 20 plus minutes a game. In a conference tournament, you're not going to get that because you have less margin for error. Coaches know that. They want to go to the tournament. Players know that. They want to go to the tournament. So make sure you're looking at the box scores after the games to pick off some of these overnights.
No doubt about it. And you know, a lot of times that's not going to always be factored in. And a lot of another unique thing about conference tournament betting, there's a lot of recency bias. So, I mean, if a team wins by 20, 25 one night because they hit 15 three-pointers, a lot of times that's not going to always be considered to be an outlier type of performance like it necessarily when you have 3-4 days in between games and really can dive into it. So that's another thing to keep track of. But I'm at least more prone, not game two or maybe even game three, but definitely when you get to the semifinals and the finals and some of these teams are playing that fourth game in 4 days, and if their guys are getting, you know, they have six guys that are all getting, you know, 30 plus minutes or whatever, and they don't have an 8-man rotation, more often than not, I'm going to fade that short rotation compared to the guys that are a little bit more fresh.
And again, another angle that you can possibly look to exploit a little bit here, teams that generally, you know, aren't that deep or don't tap into that depth, what if you get a guy, you know, third game in 3 days, something like that, one of your star players gets into foul trouble? That is a significant downgrade for you with a player that you haven't really used, a player that hasn't really gotten his feet wet in this conference tournament with these stakes. You know, that may be a live betting opportunity for you as well.
Absolutely. Live betting is the wave of the future, and you can just see and that's another thing. If you want, look, it's tough beating the book because you got to lay 110. But man, when it comes to in-game live betting, and you can a lot of times just tell right away in that first TV timeout or the first two TV timeouts if a team's just dead tired. Now you might have to lay a little extra in that regard, but sometimes it's just, you know, totally apparent that a team that maybe have been performing well that the previous two, three nights in the tournament. A lot of times we see it, they're on fire for two, three games, and all of a sudden that last game they get beat by 20 or 25. So definitely in-game live betting creates a lot more opportunities in that regard.
One other point that you've got here in general about conference tournaments, and I like being able to talk about this point because it's something that you're going to hear. It's something that the talking heads and the pundits are going to refer to. It's one of those betting cliches that people want. Well, not even betting cliches, but it becomes a betting cliche as you start looking up and down the board. And I totally agree with your stance on it.
Yeah, I mean, how many times do you hear this? I mean, it's tough to beat a team three times in a single season. I mean, it's so overused. I mean, if revenge is your major factor, wouldn't revenge been a factor in game two when you lost that game? Now, I get it. If the first two games were a little bit misleading, then sure, but that's not necessarily saying it's tough to beat a team three times. That's just saying, hey, let's play on a couple of misleading finals. But, I mean, sometimes in these conference tournaments, I'm not afraid to lay some chalk here because let's face it, I mean, when you beat a team twice in the regular season, well, yeah, for the most part, you're probably better than them. And a lot of times, if you beat a team twice, they probably got a worse seed, so maybe they played an extra game. You're a little bit more rested in that regard. It gets used so much, and it's more of an ESPN talking point that I think you can really play against. Because, I mean, let's face it, people start watching this 24/7 at this point, this time of year when it comes to college basketball. And it really couldn't be more wrong, in my opinion. It, obviously, you don't want to blindly play on every 2-0 team in the regular season, but that tough to beat a team three times in a single season, to me, is just overused so much.
Yeah, it totally is. And you brought up a really good point, and this isn't one of those cases about, you know, a team that lost twice to a team in the regular season, but I was looking at this with regards to the SoCon, the Southern Conference here, and UNC Greensboro and East Tennessee State split their two games this season. Now, in the first game, East Tennessee State shot 52.2% to Greensboro's 33.3%. I believe that game was actually on the road, too. I could be mistaken there. But you know, when you have a situation where a team outshoots another team by 19% and they have a similar number of field goal attempts, that's really significant. So you come to the second game here in the rematch, East Tennessee State shot 30.3%. And Greensboro went wire to wire. It was literally wire to wire. They scored first and then won the game outright and won the game comfortably as well. Those are the things that you want to look at in terms of evaluating the two previous performances. Dig into that box score. Don't just look and say, oh, well, you know, Team A won on the road and Team B won on the road, so, you know, it just cancels out. It doesn't. Look and see what sorts of adjustments those two teams made. You know, maybe like the Gonzaga-St. Mary's example, I think, is the best one, where St. Mary's won on the road in Gonzaga, second meeting between the two teams. Jock Landale had 5 field goal attempts. He has to be the highest usage player for St. Mary's for them to do anything. He had 5 field goal attempts. Gonzaga won comfortably. Which game means more to you when breaking down the third game that we're going to get here between those two teams? I would say the second one, because now the onus is on St. Mary's to adjust. So those are the types of betting angles you want to look for here when a team is playing a team for the third time. And obviously, you know, if they won the first 2 times, take a look and find out why.
I totally agree, and I think several sharp points on you, and I'll just identify one. What game means more to me more often than not is game 2, unless it was a total outlier as far as the stats went, where a team hit 15 threes, the other team was dead cold, went like 2 out of 18 from behind the arc. But why do I evaluate and put more, you know, as far as emphasis goes in the game 2? Because the adjustments were made. I mean, I get it if a game was played home and away in that, but to me, the game 2 reflects the adjustments that were made out of game 1, and I would trust the team and the outcome of game 2 much more than game 1. And plus, let's face it, I mean, that there's going to be a more recency with that particular game than there will be with the earlier meeting. So I think that's a great point on your behalf.
So one of the things we've talked about here this week, and obviously the Big Ten tournament, basically starting a little bit after we're finished recording this on Wednesday evening, is that, you know, you talk about Nebraska and how they have so much to gain from this conference tournament. It'll be a talking point in the ACC conference tournament with Notre Dame as well when we get to that one next week. These teams on the bubble from these major conferences that aren't in right now, or are maybe on one of those last 4, they got to play a play-in game, or, you know, maybe they are the last 4 out, something like that. You're going to hear a lot of talk about them. And look, sometimes their game lines or their futures prices are going to be inflated because you've got that must-win type of factor. So I know that you've got some thoughts here that you want to pass along for the bubble teams as we go throughout these conference tournaments.
Yeah, I mean, be careful backing them for several reasons. Number one, you talk about must win. Well, what does must win do? Well, it creates extra pressure on you. Hey, we got to win this game, or we're not going to go to the NCAA tournament, or our season's over with for the most part. So to me, that creates, everyone's, must win. You're going to be totally focused on that. But I mean, there's a negative connotation that there's extra pressure on you to perform in that particular game. Second for me is usually you look at bubble teams. Why aren't they on the bubble? Well, it's one of 2 reasons. Number one, you're on the bubble because you're just not that good, obviously. Or number 2, you're just not that consistent. So maybe you have a marquee win on the season and then you can't be a lower level team. So maybe that means that you're fully focused. So therefore, you're more like the one that pulled an upset over a Villanova or Virginia. But to me, it's tough trusting bubble teams for the most part because there's a reason they're on the bubble. They haven't been very good for the season. And then finally, the market encompasses this. Everyone knows who's on the bubble for the most part at this particular time of the season. At least they know that, you know, the 4 or 5 premier programs, the Syracuses, the Nebraskas, those types of teams that are on the bubble and get talked about on a nightly basis. I think you're paying a premium if you want to back those teams because that's what the market's talking about, and that they have to win this game or they might come off the bubble and that. So I would say that the market reflects it, and understand if you're going to be backing some of these teams in must-win situations, you're probably laying an extra half point to a point.
And keep in mind, too, here, that some teams are on the bubble largely based on circumstance. I mean, Notre Dame right now, for example, they're a top 30 team per KenPom, but they just don't have that resume. They don't have the wins necessary to put themselves firmly into the NCAA tournament field. And now they get Bonzi Colson back. And I actually texted Kyle Hunter on my way here to the studio for this recording. And I was like, hey, are you thinking about putting a play on Notre Dame? They're 450-1 at 5 dimes right now. And, you know, Colson helps them, and it's a low risk investment because it's just a few, you know, you could throw 10 bucks on it, 15, 20 bucks, whatever you want to do when it comes to a future like that. But also, you know, they're a bubble team because they haven't had him. Who's to say that they suddenly figure it out? I mean, now they have to get acclimated to playing with him again, and they have to do it in a very short amount of time. They got, 2 regular season games left, and then however long they're in the conference tournament to try and prove their case that they're a tournament team with Bonzi Colson on the floor. that may not necessarily be the case either. So, you know, some of these bubble teams that have had injuries that have put them on the bubble, there's no guarantee that they play themselves off of it in a positive way.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, you would have liked Bonzi Colson probably back last week, get a couple games under his belt before these last two games, and they got very disparate games. Pittsburgh tonight, as we're taping, with or without him, the Irish should have a field day in that one. And then they're at number one Virginia in that one, so not a lot. I mean, obviously, opportunity at number one Virginia, if they can win that game, man, that would be you know, a feather in their cap. But you're right, not all bubble teams are created equal for the most part. You got to identify why they're on the bubble, and Notre Dame's only on the bubble because it's just not been the Bonzi Colson injury. I mean, they missed Matt Farrell for 5 or 6 games. Rex Fluger missed a couple of games. DJ Harvey, one of their guards, he missed multiple games. So it's just not been Colson. It's been a litany. The reality is you would want a Notre Dame to have 4 or 5 games with everyone healthy. I just don't know. I think it's a little bit too little too late for them, but we'll see. I mean, keep in mind they won the Maui Invitational when healthy. So, I mean, clearly when they're at least healthy, this was a top 15 team.
All right, let's talk about a couple of conference tournaments here, and then we'll wrap up with an overrated and underrated team that's still playing regular season games, and then take a look here at a future that you've got, and then Duke and North Carolina for this weekend. So let's take a real quick look here at the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament. I know that you listed this one as one that you were interested in talking about. Is there an angle that you're looking at here in this one? Is it a futures play? What piques your interest about Arch Madness?
Well, Arch Madness, I mean, I'm sure this is going to get talked about, but I mean, again, you're playing with a big backdrop a lot of times with Arch Madness. And let's face it, just style of play in Missouri Valley, you got some legitimate defenses in that conference led by Loyola Chicago. Some, you know, the offenses that aren't so great, but for the most part, you got to slow down tempo. And for so many years there with that big backdrop, I mean, the rule of thumb in this particular conference tournament was to play the under, just not style of play, but just the fact that these smaller schools not used to playing in big arenas, all of a sudden you start playing in that big arena. So I would more often, and not to blindly play on anything, but I mean, goodness sakes, I mean, that's one conference where we see some of the lowest scoring out there. But you also look at Loyola Chicago, at least one that I've always looked at least in this tournament, the number one seeds in the opening round, that's going to be Loyola Chicago, 28-0 straight up in this tournament, 27-1 against the spread, 20 wins, 7 losses, and a push. I would not be backing Loyola Chicago's opponent in the first round on the money line just from that stat alone.
You know, and it's a shame for those teams in the Missouri Valley because you finally get rid of Wichita State. And of course, you had Creighton in there for a while, too, that was very, very good. You had some years where Northern Iowa was really solid and could go toe-to-toe with Wichita State. But you finally get rid of the Shockers. And all these teams in this conference are kind of going, you know what? Maybe we'll have a shot this year. And then Loyola Chicago figures it all out. They played very well last year. I think John Brandon's going to find himself in a bigger job here very, very soon. But now you still have a minus money favorite in Loyola Chicago. It's just minus 103. It's not the minus 450 or minus 400 that we see Wichita State. But man, these poor teams in the middle and bottom of this league, I feel so bad for them.
Yeah, and I mean, my top power ratings on a neutral floor, I mean, even compared to Southern Illinois and Missouri State, I mean, Loyola Chicago, 7-8 points better than even the number 2, 3, 4 seeds in this particular tournament. And you know, one more thing I want to say why the number one seeds are so good in the Missouri Valley tournament, and we didn't talk about this one. Oh, my goodness. You talk about a bad spot, but, you know, the 8-9 matchup happens at 7 o'clock at night the night before, and then they have to turn it right around and play like a noon start time the following day. Just a huge disadvantage. And I make sure you're double-checking that as far as not only where games are played, but also the time of games. Just simple handicapping 101 that you can really take advantage of.
And again, it's something you have to train yourself to do with college basketball because we don't have back-to-backs or 3-and-3s. You know, I mean, obviously we don't see 3-and-3s in the NBA either, but we know, you know, back-to-backs, 3-and-4s, those situational spots, very, very important. In college basketball, you'll get the Thursday, Saturday, or the Saturday, Monday, something like that, but you don't get these back-to-backs. These are exclusive to those early season tournaments, as we talked about, and then here in March, or in conference tournaments as well. So, you know, you have to pay attention to those types of things. All right, let's take a look at the Horizon League real quickly here. I know that you're a Midwest guy. You're not in this area anymore, but I imagine it's a conference that you've checked in on here a time or two this year. And this one, moving to Little Caesars Arena in Detroit, was at Joe Louis Arena, Motor City Madness here in a new venue. Is this a tournament that you have any interest in it? Any, you know, angles that you're looking at?
Well, another one that, you know, a type of conference that's really, we just got done talking about Missouri Valley taking a step back without a couple of their premier programs, the Creightons and the Wichita States of the world. Same thing here. I mean, you lose Valparaiso here recently, but Northern Kentucky obviously deserves to be the favorite, you know, at least best offensive and defensive efficiencies around. This is one tournament, though, where the top seeds have not performed well in this particular tournament. You look at Oakland last year, it was a team that was the number one seed there, a 13.5 point chalk, and ended up losing to Youngstown State. So I would say Oakland is a team that's drawing a high seed there in that tournament. They've been relatively poor, 0-4 straight up and against the spread their last four tournament games there in the Horizon League. Overall, looking at it, Wright State's got the best defense. Oakland, the best offense in this particular one. Northern Kentucky, the best overall team. I think Northern Kentucky, the team that won it last year, it might have a pretty much a runaway here. I was liking Illinois-Chicago as maybe a sleeper, and then last weekend, Illinois-Chicago on their home court had an opportunity to prove something to me against Northern Kentucky, against Wright State, and couldn't get the job done at home. Therefore, I don't think they can get the job done on a neutral floor here in Detroit.
All right, I do want to throw this out here, and I guess since we're in that same state, it's a good time to talk about this. We already touched a little bit on the Big Ten tournament and about, you know, Nebraska and the emphasis that they're putting on this postseason. Well, unfortunately for them, in that quarterfinal matchup, they're probably going to run into the Michigan Wolverines. And in terms of looking at the futures market here, you think there's some value on the team from Ann Arbor?
Yeah, I was disappointed because I love both Nebraska and Michigan right now. And both teams, I probably made more money on Michigan and Nebraska than any two teams in college basketball this year. And when I saw that 4-5 there, I just scratched my head because I think you lose a little bit of an opportunity. But let's talk about, you know, Michigan right now. I think a team that's a 5 seed in the Big Ten tournament, and I think they're a top 10 team. At least you look at since December 4th, when they lost, right after they lost to Ohio State. This team's 17-4 straight up, 15-6 against the spread. Two of those straight up losses in the final seconds against Purdue. They have a marquee road win in East Lansing against Michigan State. I mean, several things I like Michigan. John Beilein, you talk about all these coaches, great tournament coaches, you know, Tom Izzo, Coach K, Roy Williams. The best guy with a large sample size against the spread in whether it's the NCAA tournament, postseason, conference tournaments, NIT, CBI, CIT. How about John Beilein, 54-30 against the spread in all tournament action, 20-9 in the NCAA tournament, but never gets the respect that the other guys do. Therefore, there's value on Michigan. And the other factor I like Michigan right now is defensively. They're more known as an offensive team spacing around the perimeter there on offense under John Beilein. But this year's Michigan's defense, by far the best he's had in a decade there. Average defensive rank for them coming into this season, the last 10 years, like number 73, never had a top 35 defense. This year's defense is legitimate top 15. And boy, offensively, I thought they just had their best half of the season just a game ago, first half against Maryland. I love the upside of Michigan, and I'll be backing them not only in the Big Ten tournament, but when it comes NCAA tournament time, here's a team that's probably going to be a 4, 5, 6 seed that I think is clearly capable of at least making the Sweet 16, if not more.
Yeah, I mean, and again, this is one of those prices where this is a team that does have a pretty high ceiling. So, you know, you can get them to a point where, you know, the price out there right now, about 40-1 or so, something like that. You can still get them to a point where they can make a deep enough run to go ahead and hedge this thing. And, you know, again, we talk about futures and hedging and the importance of that. So, you know, I think you're definitely onto something there. And keep in mind, this is a Wolverines team last year that was the 8 seed in the Big Ten tournament and won the damn thing. So, you want to talk about teams that get better in the month of March? That's a pretty good example right there, and you gave out some great stats about John Beilein as well. So I know that we talked a lot of conference tournament stuff, and we've been doing that a lot. You know, we've kind of neglected the teams that are still playing regular season action here, so that's how we'll wrap up with a look at an overrated team and an underrated team that hasn't made it to the conference tournament portion of the year yet.
Yeah, and this is more big picture. Now, I'm not blindly fading and overrated team. And my most overrated team right now is Xavier, a team that's what, number three in the AP poll right now. I don't even have them in my top 10. And look, I mean, when my power ratings, it's just simple. I mean, when I do a power rating, who would be favored over who on a neutral floor? Xavier in that metric is not number three in the country. I mean, Duke would be favored over Virginia, Villanova, Purdue, Michigan State, North Carolina, Kansas, a ton of teams. And I see a couple of problems with Xavier right now. Number one defensive side of the ball. And here's a team that right now, if you believe the bracket projections, going to be a number one or number two seed. I'll be looking to fade Xavier when it comes to the NCAA tournament and maybe even the Big East Finals. It's a team defensively, number 68 most efficient defense in the country. You say, oh, that's fine. There's 350 teams. But the reality is, if you're going to be a number one or number two seed, then therefore you should be a national title contender. Last 16 national champs in college basketball, every single one of them had a top 20 defense, average defensive rank number 8. And you look at the other top 15 teams in the country right now in college basketball, Xavier's got the worst defensive efficiency rating. Therefore, I'll be fading them. Big East final, if they play Villanova, Villanova's just hammered them each of the first two meetings. And second round on in the NCAA tournament, I'll be looking to fade Xavier. Underrated team, I think Baylor. We saw it last night. Why in the hell were they laying only 3.5 against Oklahoma? It looks like the market threw Baylor in the trash because they lost at TCU and lost at home against West Virginia. Reality is TCU's top 20 caliber, in my opinion. West Virginia's top 10 caliber. So it's not like those are two bad losses. This is a team that's now 6-2 straight up and against the spread their last 8 games. Top 10 defense. They played a top 15 strength of schedule. They're peaking at the right time. And they're also deep. There's teams that we said, what teams do you want to be looking to buy this time of the year? Deep teams. Baylor has only two guys that average more than 30 minutes. That's like 31, 32 minutes for those two guys. And then they have 6 additional players that average between 21 and 24 minutes. So they legit have an 8-man rotation, a unique style of defense with their zone. Baylor, underrated.
Baylor's such a hard team for me because Scott Drew has had periods of time where they've gone on runs in the Big 12 Conference Tournament. They've looked like a team going into March Madness that should be able to make a run, and then they screw up against a 14 seed or something like that in the first round. They are very, very hard to figure out. They're Jekyll and Hyde types of performances here, specifically in the NCAA Tournament. I mean, they generally play pretty well in the Big 12 Conference Tournament from what I can recall. But, I mean, I get it. I totally understand where you're coming from. They are a very good defensive team, and they do tend to, you know, peak here late in the regular season on into the conference tournament. We'll see if they can get over the hump here in the NCAA tournament. But I think that you're on the right track with both of those teams there. And keep in mind, you know, Xavier was an 11 seed last year. So, I mean, it's great, and they made a good run, and Chris Mack's a fantastic coach. But, you know, still, I mean, is this a team that's a top 8 team where the seeds are going to put them? I certainly don't think so. One more talking point here for this Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio that we are recording on Wednesday afternoon. So, again, our apologies if any numbers have moved around or any injuries have popped up, anything like that. Duke, North Carolina, kind of a big game here on Saturday.
You think? Not only the best rivalry in college basketball, the most closely contested. I mean, you'll see the ESPN stat come out. The last 101 meetings, North Carolina leads 51-50. Cumulative score, North Carolina's outscored Duke by 2 points in the last 101 meetings. Doesn't get any closer than that. You look at the first meeting, North Carolina dominated the boards, even though North Carolina traditionally, last 4 or 5 years, it's been North Carolina with the bigs down low, Duke a very perimeter-oriented team. Well, the roles have flipped this year. Duke has got the size advantage down low over North Carolina. North Carolina, very perimeter team. But in that first meeting, you saw North Carolina, I think, 20-11 on the offensive boards. To me, they just cared more. Duke sloppy with the basketball a little bit. North Carolina only had 2 turnovers in the whole game. They really took care of it. Where I'm looking to see some value here is if you've been paying attention to Duke totals the last 5 games since they switched to more of a zone defense, I mean, you have had some easy winners. Last 5 games for Duke have went under the total, all 5 of them by an average of 29 points per game. That zone defense, this is a Duke defense that went from being questionable, maybe not even in the top 50. Last 5 games, and they moved up their defensive efficiency rating to in the top 15 now. So it'll be a high total, most public bet game probably of the entire regular season because it's 2 blue bloods. It's on ESPN primetime. They'll be wanting to bet the over. I think to me that creates a little bit of value on the under, even though I expect both teams to be running and gunning. But when you're dealing with a total probably of 160 or maybe a little bit more, I'm not afraid to take a little bit of a piece on the under there.
Yeah, and keep in mind, too, I mean, when you play that zone defense, you've got more rim protection to grab those defensive rebounds. So that takes away a little bit of what North Carolina can do on the offensive glass. Plus, North Carolina, traditionally under Roy Williams, this isn't to say that they can't shoot from the outside, but they try to penetrate. They try to get inside, get to the rim, get a lot of high percentage looks. Obviously, against a zone, a little bit more challenging to do that. So, you know, that's a really great point that you brought up, is that, you know, the odds makers haven't adjusted to the fact that Duke is playing a much different kind of defensive scheme. And, you know, with so much to worry about, conference tournaments, futures adjustments, you know, these big last regular season cards, all this type of stuff, things can fall through the cracks. I mean, you know, they're trying to put up MLB win totals and NBA and NHL every day. And, you know, they're probably starting to do the same things with college football that you've been doing so that they can be ready, you know, in a couple months time here with that. NFL, they're kind of, I know some books already have, Five Dimes already has NFL season win totals out. There's a lot of stuff going on, and there are some things that they can definitely miss. And one final point about Duke and North Carolina, you know, we had this conversation a few weeks ago about people that are just now starting to come around to college basketball, wanting to bet what they know, wanting to bet what's comfortable, wanting to play those blue blood types of teams. People are just going to expect Duke and North Carolina to run up and down the floor. Odds makers, you know, probably don't have to adjust because they don't need to. They know that they're going to get the over money and they're probably okay with that under position. So should be continued value here this weekend.
No question about it. And I will say they have adjusted a little on the Duke totals by about 5 points, you know, maybe even 3 or 4 points. And, you know, the professional bettors have driven down their openers by 4 or 5 points each last 3 or 4 games. But again, Duke's covering these. I mean, the adjustment has been made, but only by a couple of points overall, maybe 5 or 6 at the most. And they're still going under by 20-plus points per game. This time of year, you're just not going to see an over-adjustment. It's not like early on in the season where you get a 2, 3, 4, 5-game run, and then you see some massive adjustments. Not going to be the case here with North Carolina Duke. Number one, what you just said, public betting, there's going to be an inherent bias here, and they're going to be wanting to bet the over. Therefore, I like to be anti-public because I like to make more money more often than not. And the books just, I think, cleaned up a 54 consecutive months of winning, a profit, sports books. I like to be with the sports books. And if they have a liability, a little bit of liability, where they need the under more than the over, well, what the hell? I might as well have the under in North Carolina Duke.
Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. What's going on over at the website right now, man?
Yeah, BradPowersSports.com. I will have a spring football guide coming out in about 10 days that will cover you season win totals, if there's any out there, future tickets, week one, anything. Make sure you're checking that out. But we'll also have an NCAA tournament preview that's snuck into there. So make sure you're checking that out. Right now you can download all past issues, past records, the last 3, 4 years. Find it right now, BradPowersSports.com. Early renewal price for the football newsletter, the number one newsletter in the country, 55% winners. Over a 500-plus game sample size, NFL college football the last 3 years, $69 weekly during the season, monthly during the offseason. March Madness VIP special will be available for you here next week, $99 for that. That is not a weekly or a monthly update. That is daily VIP action. That will be available next week, $99, BradPowersSports.com.
And you can follow Brad on Twitter, at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, as always, man, appreciate your time. Thank you so much for doing this, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on again.
Great stuff there with Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Love these studio quality recordings, and especially to get him on the air. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Plenty more college basketball stuff coming your way with that. So that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again on Friday.